I just heard a very nice story on the way. I don't like commuting. But I did hear a very nice story today. So there was a yid called Abgadla Eisner. He was a very, very was a great mechanech. He was a ger chosid from the old ger. I don't have any personal. I don't know much besides the actual story that happened. He was a very great mechanech. He was a mashkiach in ger yeshivas. He was a very great personality. Unfortunately, he only had one child, and that child was murdered during the war. So, hey, shalom aleichem. Hey, wow. Did you bring some of Eretz Yisrael back? Good. Very good. Good to have you back. You were indeed. Yes. You know, the Gemara says that should be libi b'mizrach. Our heart should be towards east, towards Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi says, so this Gadol Eisner was a very great mashpia, a great mechanech, a very special, big talmid chacham, a great masmid. There was no children really. That the only child that he had, his daughter, unfortunately didn't come out of the war. And Gadol Eisner himself had a very, very difficult. He was first in the ghetto in Lodz, and eventually he was he never ended up in Dachau concentration camp. At one point, there was a Todesmarsch, the infamous. When the Germans, when the Nazis forced the Yidden to, it's incredible the depth of the evilness of the Nazis when they were in the concentration camp, which was on the east towards the eastern border. So when the Russians came to liberate the areas, so instead of letting the Jews in the camps just be liberated and actually survive, and the last survivors just to survive, instead of that, what happened was that the Germans, with this incredible, unparalleled rishus, they forced him to walk to mainland Germany, to be in German areas and territories, so to avoid liberation. And they had to walk bare feet for many, many miles. Most of them were ill, and all of them were undernourished, and not many of them survived the Todesmarsch. They were called Todesmarsch because they taught the death marches. And many tens of thousands of Yidden were killed during the Todesmarsch because whoever wouldn't be able to, whoever would stop, they were not given any food and drink, and they just had to literally walk many hundreds of miles into other concentration camps. The Todesmarsch. Gadol Eisner also was in one of those Todesmarsch, and he was going from Dachau into. And what happened at one point, he felt he can't walk anymore. He just literally couldn't take it anymore, and his legs couldn't carry his. He couldn't walk anymore. After many, he physically couldn't, and he stopped. And they all knew what it means if a person would stop, he would be shot on, literally or immediately. And he stopped. He said, he literally can't walk anymore. He didn't have the physical strength to carry on, continue walking. And he stopped. And the Nazi came towards him, and said, "No, go already. Walk." And he said, "I can't." So he took out the gun. And was about to kill him. That second, a person who knew Abgadol took him, grabbed him by the neck, by the shirt or whatever it wasn't really a shirt, whatever that was that they were wearing, and he said two words. He says, "Gadol Loif." Gadol, like the name God, yeah? God, his name? Hmm?
Fly.
Loif. Loif means go. Gadol Loif, go. Gadol walk, go. And he pulled him, and he somehow managed to get him. Get him up and get him to walk, and he managed to get his last bit of strength together, and he carried on walking, and that was literally saved him from the definite death by being murdered by the Nazi. He survived the war, just about survived the war, and he stayed in Europe for a bit. He stayed in France for a few years. Eventually, he made it to Eretz Yisrael, where he continued being mechanech many hundreds of Ger Talmidim. The old Muslim were grandparents by now, but he really built up the Ger Moistas and establishments. He said this gave him a new interpretation. When we say mechayim b'meisim, we say on Friday night. What do we say? Mechayim b'meisim. B'mamoi. Yeah, we say Friday night by davening, no? Yeah, you probably know with the tune, but I'm not going to embarrass myself. Mechayim meisim b'mamoi. Don't we say that? You do, right? Mechayim meisim b'mamoi. That's here, Friday night. Exactly, that's it. Thank you, yeah? So literally what it means is HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be Mechai Meisim, will revive the dead B'mamoi with his statement. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu says a maima, a statement, HaKadosh Baruch Hu only needs to do is to make a statement, and by saying the statement HaKadosh Baruch Hu will revive the dead Mechai Meisim B'mamoi. He will be Mechai the Meisim, the dead, B'mamoi, with his statement, with his decree. It's talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Reb Goldin said he had different interpretation in that. He said it could mean something else. He experienced himself in this particular instance, Mechai Meisim B'mamoi, with a Yid, a Jew, can be Mechai Meisim B'mamoi. This other individual, he said two words. He says, Godel Loif. And with that, he was Mechai Meisim. He saved him from definite death. So he said, with two words, or a couple of words sometimes can do, is incredible. It can literally be Mechai Meisim, B'mamoi. So this was his motto, and he always said that if people just would realize the power of, and the strength of, and of one's words, he said people would be speaking much nicer to each other, because a person can really be literally Mechai Meisim, B'mamoi, and give an enormous amount of chizik to other people around him. Okay, Rabbi Yisrael, we're up to Simon Tov Reish Chof, and I want to learn tonight Chof, Tov Reish Chof, Chof Aleph, possibly Chof Beis as well, Pei Beis in our editions, Hilchos Yom HaKippurim. So Simon Tov Reish Chof says, Minag Yofer Lekatze B'Tfilah Shachis. It's a great custom to be Mekatze, to shorten the Tfilah Shachis. Yom Kippur should be short. Shachis, Yom Kippur, should be short. What does that mean? Tov lekatze bepiyutim, it is right, it is proper to be mekatze, to shorten the piyutim, the additional tefillas, uveslichos, and the aslichas, shachis, kederemayo. One should be a bit hurried, a bit faster. Be'inyin she'ispal musav koidim sheva shois, because we're trying to aim that Musaf should be started at least before the seventh halachic hour. Remember, Chatzos midday is the sixth hour. So we want to, by the beginning of the seventh hour, we want to start Musaf already. So therefore, don't schlep Shachis too long. If you do too many tefillas, too many piyutim, too many slichas by Shachis and Kippur, you're going to end up running in trouble because you're going to start Musaf too late. Now, why is it that Musaf can't start so late? It's a technical problem. We're long before Shkia. We're long before Shkia. Yeah, but that's not. This is true. We should be finishing before Shkia anyway. But here we're saying, forget about Shkia. Just Musaf should be. Shach should be finished before the seventh hour. It's got to be Mincha. Oh, no! Not only fitting in Mincha. But if it's after the seventh hour, it's really the time to have mincha.
When you say seventh hour, we mean mincha is sort of six and a half, right?
Right. Exactly. So the thing is that if you were to schlep out shachis for so long, and you're finishing shachis at a time that you could really daven mincha already, so then who says you meant to daven musaf? Perhaps you should be daven mincha. You're not going to say, whoa, one second. Musaf always comes before mincha. The answer is not necessarily, because there's one rule which would indicate that actually Mincha comes first. What's the rule? The more common one. That's right. So it could be that perhaps if you hit the seventh hour and you're still like finishing off Shachis at that point, who tells you that you mean it after Musaf? Just because Musaf is the next one in the Machsa, doesn't that say? So he says, avoid any problems. Just avoid it. Avoid this problem. And how do you avoid it? By starting Mincha early enough and by shortening it. So if you're finishing well in time, then you're going to daven Musaf and only then Mincha, which is the right order. So there is shuls. I know of one shul that actually does daven Mincha before Musaf, but it's not the norm. And I think that generally people will be makel if it does happen, then people are going to say that we don't paskin that Tolev Shen or Tolev Kodim in this instance, and we're going to daven Musaf before Mincha. Yeah.
Could you do that on Shabbos then, Rabbi?
Absolutely. Shabbos.
You argue doing that Mincha?
Yeah,
Shabbos. You argue that, but
Yeah, on Shabbos though, you're right. It would be in principle the same question, but you have less a chance of running late on a regular Shabbos.
So, did you say that there are some shuls that do on Yom Kippur?
I know one shul that does it, but it is not the norm. It is not the norm. No, it's not really right to do that because really a minute of shach is earlier. Yeah, okay. Now, Simon Tov Reshchov Aleph. Say the Kriyas Tatoira Mila by Yom Kippur. What about Kriyas Tatoira when he's about leaning on Yom Kippur? What about Mila, Bris Mila on Yom Kippur? Motzin Shnei Sforim. You take out two Sefer Torah. That's what we do. Bereshin Korim Shisha. In the first Sefer Torah, you read, you do six portions. Pepash Achemois, we do the leaning of Achemois. Ad, until the words. Fayas Kasha Tziva Hashem, until the words. We ask Hashem, Hashem, Vim Chal B'Shabbos, and if Yom Kippur falls on Shabbos, Kerem Shiv, we do seven aliyahs. Umaftir, with regards to Maftir, Kerem B'Sheni, Pinchas, V'Asoy, L'Chodesh, that's the second Sefer Torah. Umaftir, B'Yishaya, and with regards to the Haftir, we do Yishaya, V'Omar, Asoy, Yisoy, L'Uponu, Derech, Ad, Ki, Pi, Hashem, Dibeir. So that's the leaning and the Haftir that we do. Siv Beis. By the way, why do we lean? It's a strange, it would appear to be a strange reading that we do on Yom Kippur. You know, if you'd ask me what would be an appropriate reading on Yom Kippur, I would tell you, what would you say? Shuvah, yeah. I would say perhaps I say Sadibris, I would guess. Hanoichi Hashem Eloikecha. I would speak about, if there's anything about judgment, we could think of something. I don't know, we'll think of something. But why Achemois, which is talking about all the Arois, all the forbidden marriages? Isn't that strange? That's what we read in Kiddush forbidden marriages. You're not to marry her, not allowed to marry her, she's not allowed to marry him. Furthermore, Yeah, okay, let's see a bit more. Let's see base. What about Mila on Yom Kippur? When is the Mila? Do you ever experience a Mila on Yom Kippur? Bismillah on Yom Kippur? Bismillah on Yom Kippur, yeah. Bismillah, yeah. When was that?
Eric
Keith
made one.
Yeah, I also seem to remember. There was a number of years ago, yeah.
Eric Keith made one in Kaliakov.
Yeah.
Dr. Bolo came to have a gate set for it.
Oh really?
Yeah, and all they could do is loads of psalms. They pass around loads of
psalms to make the brachas. Yeah. So the Shulchan Aruch says as follows: there's a fascinating halacha over here. Morning be yoytzel and musaf. Achik kirzatel you do after leaning. That's when mila takes place. Veracha mila oimrim ashei, and after bismila say ashei, and you continue etc. Amine glomul achre ashei. Vimu b'mokam shtoch lotzim b'saknesi. If you're in a place where there's no eirov, ein molnach ad achazo asefer Torah. V'chozi v'oimim kaddish. Now, what's the fascinating halacha over here is, he's an extra Shulchan Aruch. Sorry, see, Gimel top of page 164. Mevorachin al amila beloy kois. That's what you're referring to, Rabbi Ostel, that you make a mevorachin al amila beloy kois. You do make a bracha on the mila, but you don't make a ber priagofen. V'yesh oimim, some say, te mevorachin bekois. I'm saying, no, you do make a regular priagofen, like any bris, for noisin le tinoik limoil, animoil, and you give the grape juice or the wine, you give it to the baby who is being gemalt. So now, here comes again the question. I understand the moil cannot drink. I understand the father, the Abi Aben, cannot drink. And I can understand also why all the mispalim cannot drink. But, sure, you'll find a kid there. Oh yes, you always find kids by a bris. Why is it that you cannot give it to a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old, perhaps a 9-year-old boy? You make a ber priagofen. That's the way it's meant to be on a bris. You make a ber priagofen, and instead of drinking yourself, you pass it on to the young 6-year-old. What?
Like in Shabbos, when the chazan makes kiddush in the shul, he doesn't drink the wine; he gives it to a kid to do.
Exactly, give it to a kid. Teaching them what? Yetish not of Yom Kippur. There you go. So the Mishnebuah says, it's a Gemara in Zrishoinim, they say as follows. They say, why don't you give it to a child? And he answers as follows. You can't give it to children either to drink. We're concerned. Perhaps in future he's always going to make a mistake. And in future he's always going to get a mix up. I'm going to end up on Yom Kippur. I remember, you know, I know for sure my father was a very, you know, was a firm guy, and I know my grandfather. And I remember as I was a child, I was 6, so I've got clear memories, and I know in Yom Kippur I drank in shul, I drank grape juice. I remember drinking. He may not remember, he may not associate it with a bris. And children sometimes have misconceptions. And he may always remember, I know it's okay to drink on Yom Kippur. I'm telling you it's fine to drink on Yom Kippur grape juice. I did it as a kid.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
But Rabbi, any way children can eat, and the mothers take the children home to give them food on Yom Kippur, so what's the difference?
Very good.
Children, you know, you see children going home or having a lunch, whatever, from the, you know, under bar mitzvah. So, what's the difference?
So, I very much value your question. I really like your question. See, that kids anyway eat, so what's wrong with, why can't they just do it this time? You know, why is it different? So, I think, do you hear the question on both sides? They're anyway allowed to, they're drinking and eating. Right, which is helpful for parents. You eat in shul, it's totally fine. So what's the answer? Why can't the punkt when it comes to that mitzvah, they can't? So I think I know what it is. I don't know for sure, but I'd like to suggest that your answer is, it's all about the environment. That we are concerned if there's organized meals or eat at home or the kids. So they know that all the adults, they are fasting and we are children and we have got that setting and we are below the age of expectation to fast and therefore we are eating and they totally understand. They can make that. Every child understands, 6-year-old, 8-year-old, understands we are children, these are the adults, we are eating and they are fasting. However, if you're doing it in shul, in front of the, you know, this is kind of, the environment is different. This is in the besmedrash, and this is with the rov on the one side, the chazan on the other side, or the other. He makes like the kind of impression on the child, you're doing, he makes a different kind of atmosphere. And this may indicate that there's nothing wrong with drinking. If you're drinking in such a, the child may make a mistake because it's not the setting, the environment of all the other children.
So but do it at home. Well, do the bris at home then.
Yeah.
And that's a different environment. So if you did the bris at home, would that change it then?
Yeah. So the answer is it wouldn't change, but the question is a good question. Yeah, it's a good question. But lemaisa the halacha, you're right. So the halacha is lemaisa that we don't. So the machloikas, many old, you cannot give it to the. We can give it to the baby though. So the baby can have a bit of what? Yeah. So the Mishnah discusses that question. Exactly, you've got to drink more than just what the baby is able to take. Yeah, it's a good question as well. Yeah. Yeah, he says the baby must be able to drink a little bit more. Yeah, I don't know how 1 week old baby can drink more than just a drop. I don't know how that works. Yeah. Okay, good question. Siv Dalet. The Musaf Oymishliach Tzibur say the Avoida. We say by Musaf, we say the Avoida of the Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash. On Yom Kippur. That is the Musaf. And the Rama says, "V'nagin lipol al pneim kshem v'akrenim ve'om." When we say v'akrenim ve'om, everybody, what does everybody do? That also, but you're right. But even more importantly, we kohrim. Yeah, we go down. Yeah, we gam balein l'shabach. Similarly, also balein l'shabach, we do the same. But shliach tzibur also lakem koymoi. The shliach tzibur cannot move. He cannot actually bow down. He can't not bow down. He cannot kneel down. Peshazat Philip, because it's his manasseh. Kedeli pulaponov veishlim chos beda oisim kain, and you have to protest on the ones who are doing it. So here they go. We've got a bit of an issue with the chazan. So us non chazanim, what can we do? We can just go down, kneel down, and that's fine, that's very good. However, the chazan is a little bit more complex, because the chazan is not allowed to move out of his place. So the Mo says, let him, he's not allowed to do that. He's not allowed to move from his place. So what is the minik? What do we normally do? What do most shuls do nowadays?
We have two men standing beside the chazan.
Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah.
One on each side of him, and they, I don't know why, I can't remember what they actually do, but from what I can remember, they have two men standing either side of the chazan.
That's exactly what happened. So the chazan, the point of the chazan is, he's not oiker his raglov, he's not moving his feet. They are holding him up in a way that he can bow down without actually moving his feet. And that's really the point, because the Shemana Esther, the person is allowed to move his feet. And if he's being held up and put down, then his feet are not really moving. And because of that, it's permitted to do that. But the Mishnah Berurah said this is a minute, but it's just as good, perhaps, what the Rama suggests, that the chazan should stay put and not move as well. That's fine as well. Every shul does it. What's that, paid attention? Chazan, Musaf? I think that it's quite common that they actually do what the Mishnah says, that they lift the chazan up. Sedra vidui. When it comes to vidui, the following words are to be said. Chotosi, Ovisi, Poshati. Many mefarshim explain what does that mean. The Mishnah's approach is in Sifkot Yudzayin. Chet, what's the difference between chet? Chet is shoigeg. The finish of a chet is that it's done without intention. Ovoin. The translation of Ovoin is Mizit. It's done with Mizit. It's done
knowingly,
intentionally. Pesha. What's the Pesha? The definition of Pesha, according to Mishnah Berurah? It's Meret. It's in a rebellious way. Interesting, that's what the Mishnah Berurah learns. There's other interpretations as well. Mishnah Berurah says, Chet is Shoigek. Ovoin is intentional. Pesha is rebellious. For Tzorech Lomar Kaltchila, we go from the least serious to the worst. Chet, shogeg, ovoin, intentional. Pesha, rebellious. It goes up and up in severity. Seivav Raboisai, which is the last seif of the simon. Noa gulido et stokes b'makipurim. The meaning is to give, to pledge charities on Yom Kippur. Be'adameisim to help the niftorim. Not to help. How should we translate that? We give it on behalf of the we give it to... What's the word? We pledge stockers to help the Niftorim to
honor them.
To what?
To honor them.
It's not really honoring. Yeah, it's in their merit. To give it in their merit. That's it. The explanation of it is given in the bracket. Umaskirin ish meisim. We mentioned the neshamos. The meisim, because the meisim, did you know that? Normally, somebody who is meis, somebody who is dead, somebody who is nifta, he cannot do anything anymore in this world. He can only time to achieve something positive for a person whose summer is in this world. Once a person is nifta, nothing can be done anymore. Children, grandchildren, etc. can still have, but a person himself cannot achieve anything anymore once he has deceased. The only exception is Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, there is still something which can happen. Yom Kippur is the only time that the neshamas of the nifta, there can still be some movement, there can still be some effective change. So if a person gives an adava in honor or in the merit of a nifta, that on Yom Kippur can still change the situation of the nifta. Not so on different days of the year. It's quite set and put there. It's not much that can actually change anymore. Perhaps a little bit, but not as much on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, a mitzvah which is done be'ad, meaning in the merit of an iftar, has much can actually still change things.
Change what?
The situation, the his
the neshama, you mean?
Yeah.
In terms of the situation for the neshama.
Correct.
And is that for the whole year? It can change the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So if a person gives in honor of his a close relative, he gives an adava on Yom Kippur, and he says, I'm pledging to give £50, I'm pledging to give £100 for tzedakah, for poor people, or for worthy causes. And if he does that on Yom Kippur, that gives the neshama of the nifter an aliyah. It gives him an aliyah. Okay, to summarize what we learned today, we spoke about on Rosh Hashanah morning, shachis should be quite quick In short, to avoid running into the mincha problem, which we mentioned, we take two sfarim out. One is Achimois, and then afterwards is the Musaf. We spoke about Haftorah, Millennium Kippur, Millennium Kippur. We spoke about Miles, we said without a becha. Some say you do make a gofen and you give a little bit of wine to the baby. Either way, the aloch is, yeah. Siv Dalet, we learned that we musaf is the state of the avoid of the Yom Kippur of the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur. We spoke about Vakonim Ve'Omer, but he goes down, excluding the Shliach Tzibur. We spoke about Vidui Chotosia Visi Poshati. We spoke about Stokos Yom Kippur. Right, okay, that's it for this evening. I wish you very good Shabbos, really.